Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into the Late Night Gamecock Show. I am your host, Matt Anderson, the Late Night Gamecock himself, joined as always by Rob Williams of Four Quarter Friday, TheBigSpur.com, SEC Sunday Night, where we're all going to head right after this show ends around 8 o'clock. Rob, how you doing, my friend?
I'm fantastic. Did you say Four Quarter Friday? Did we do that one in there? I'm not sure. If you didn't, make sure you tuned in this week for fourquarterfriday.com, because the in-state recruiting and in-state discussion in the state of South Carolina is really picking up. And there's a teaser for you guys for here in just a little bit. The first thing I have to say though is I think that we switched roles. My hat's backwards and yours is forward. What's going on tonight? Are we in an alternate universe?
Hey, dude, let's just make it right. We'll go right back here. We'll be united.
There you go. Oh, whoops. Okay. I'm with you.
But either way, happy to be here. It's unbelievable that it's almost the end of June.
Yeah, right.
And Rob, on this show, when we hit July, we start previewing the opponents on the Gamecock schedule. So we got a little bit of a teaser here for that. A little bit later, we're going to go over Kent State and Towson. And then just talk about what we're looking for in the first couple of weeks of the season. There is so much going on in the world of college athletics right now. I'm sure that almost everybody has heard about the five to play five rule or five for five rule, however they're phrasing it. We'll dig into that, how it's going to impact the Gamecocks, how it's going to impact the rest of the country, because there is a lot going on there and a lot to unpack. And then we've had so many baseball transfer portal ads. We've had some football recruits since we last spoke. Golly, what is it? Three, Rob, in the last week for football. So football seems to be picking up. We'll talk about all of that. But Rob, first, man, we will have a show on July 5th. So don't worry about that. I know that the ITG Daily Show is taking a little bit of a hiatus. There's so much to do behind the scenes, Since we all came over to own three, we've kind of been running around like a chicken with our heads cut off, trying to cover everything, get immersed into a new community, and all the while trying to kickstart Four Quarter Friday and what Rob's doing from a message board standpoint, which is going to be really excited. So, the Daily Show, those guys really do need some time. And look, Rob needs some time too. He pulls so much double duty. Covering, I think I saw you on two or three shows this week, Rob. But
Yeah, I'm on everything. I'm on every
we'll be
show,
back at it.
actually.
But Rob, before we go any further, how about you talk a little bit more about what Four Quarter Friday is going to be and what kind of impact it's going to have for the state of South Carolina?
Yeah, so keep a lookout for this week, fourquarterfriday.com. In addition to our shows on Friday at 9 a.m., you're going to start seeing the website getting really active. Smitty and I will be covering high school sports news across the state. But it's going to be a little different than what you see from other outlets. This is something brand new that looks nothing like anything that you've really seen. It's kind of a new product from On3 and Rivals. And it's like you mentioned, Matt, it is going to feature that message board piece that we know and love. And a lot of times on Four Quarter Friday, when we're live on Friday mornings, we'll get a little friendly fire going there in the chat box with some of our guys and gals that are typically great friends showing up in the ITG chat box. This gives them a chance to kind of, sling some friendly jokes and jabs at their friends there that might be down the road at a different school. So something to pay attention to. We will be all over it in terms of all sports. I know that football probably is on the forefront of people's minds right now, moving the needle, but we had Andrew Baxley on last week from Prep Hoops South Carolina because summertime is big for basketball. We've talked about the 2027 class at length, and now, Matt, a lot of players in the top 100 nationally in the 2028 class reside in the state of South Carolina. So something to really watch out for there. Gamecocks have gotten in and offered a handful of those guys as well. Baseball season comes around, but it's not just those things. It's all sports. So you're going to get soccer, you're going to get volleyball, you're going to get track and field. You're going to get cross country. You're going to have lacrosse and swim, and all the things are going to get mentioned there. We've done a lot of golf coverage lately, so we will make sure that you are covered from head to toe and every sport that you want to hear about. And if you are listening to us right now and you have a son or a daughter, a grandson, a granddaughter, a niece, nephew, friend down the street that plays at a school and we need to hear about this prospect or how somebody's doing on the field or court, let us know. Send me a DM. Follow Four Quarter Friday at Four Quarter SC on X and let us know there. Or you can subscribe to our YouTube channel and make sure you're commenting there or any of our social media, to be honest. The other feature there would be we're going to do comprehensive team coverage. So it's not just individuals. It's not just recruiting. We're going to have you up to date on what's happening in communities and what's happening with teams so you can know what's going on Friday nights, who is expected to be good and in this sport coming up, whatever it may be. Right now, obviously, that's a football discussion. So if you are a fan of a high school team specifically or just a high school athletic department, make sure that you're tuning in, rep your team, subscribe to the site, and let us know. I've already got some people planted around the state, just me and Smitty. It's hard to get across the entire state of South Carolina all at one time. So I know we have a few people that are scoping things out for me and will be able to help us fill in what's going on in this town or that town at this stadium or that stadium while Smitty and I are at different games of the week. So exciting stuff, exciting coverage, for everybody. I know that Friday nights are special in this state. Baseball is special in the state, basketball is special in the state, and it goes so far beyond that. So we're excited to get going here this week, and we want all of you to tune in to the website. Get on there, fourquarterfriday.com. Make sure that you are checking out the content, but also an opportunity for you to engage on the message board, and we want to cultivate a strong community there as well. So come on over, and you'll get a product that you've never had before at the high school level, that you've never seen before at the high school level. This is a brand new deal. And it's going to be unique, and we're going to work with everybody to make sure that everything is done and done well. So we're excited about it. Matt, I appreciate you giving me just a chance to kind of spill my guts there on everything that people can expect that's coming up here shortly. And well, hey, Roger, over there. We've got a lot of people in the chat, and I see some of our friends over there. Roger from Woodruff, watch out in Woodruff. We might have some Four Quarter Friday news there coming up too, so.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting because, you know, high school sports matter so much to folks in this state. And, you know, this isn't Carolina Clemson, you know, this isn't
right.
Carolina versus Coastal, you know, the Twitter stuff we've seen, but there's some beef and there's some drama in the high school ranks. And, you know, you go to my hometown of Florence, South Carolina, if you get those Wilson Tigers, those proud Wilson Tigers on there, they will be repping their school. So everyone needs to go rep their school. You know, it helps you stay in touch with your high school alma mater as well, because, you know, people move away, but they still care about the sport. So I'm excited for it. I'm excited for the community it's going to bring together. And, you know, I've already talked to my neighbor. His son is just finished runner up for the state wrestling title in his weight division. He's gearing up and ready for his senior season. He's going to try and take state over. He actually just transferred to South Florence. So that's the kind of information you'll get. You know, where's the best wrestling state going to be next year? Not at West Florence. He's going to my alma mater, South Florence Bruins. So excited for that. Rob, let's just jump right into it here. Let's start with baseball. You know, I saw something on the message boards and it really cracked me up that people are starting to call the Gamecock baseball team the Coastal Forest Gamecocks, because when you look at Wake Forest and you look at Coastal Carolina, and obviously Kevin Schnall, you know, making the jump to South Carolina from Coastal, and then Bill Salento coming over from Wake as the associate head coach, recruiting coordinator, whatever his title is, but he's going to be coaching the hitters. You kind of see them plucking some of the best players and prospects from their programs to come to South Carolina. And if you live in an NIL transfer portal world, and yeah, you got to go after players that come from established programs with established results, and they're doing it. And if you're going to poach their coaches, you might as well take the best players from the team too. So, you know, Rob, before we get into individual names and such and stuff like that on the baseball side, what has it felt like for you seeing South Carolina be so active in the portal and so much excitement surrounding the sport again?
I think that energy is a big word that comes to mind for me, because this program lacked it in the past two seasons. You got a little jolt of energy at the beginning of each season. You know, to begin the pulmonary era, there was a jolt of newness and a new coaching hire and some energy that quickly dissipated as the team did not perform. And then again this year, well, it's the start of a new year. You got new faces, there's some hope on the horizon. And then the last little jolt was after Paul Menieri and the University of South Carolina parted ways and Monty Lee took over, there was some energy, not just on the part of the fan base, but on the part of the team you could see as well. That, again, dissipated before the end of the year. So now what we can see, Matt, is something that has a little more lasting power because it's June. And we have a long time before there's actual baseball to be played on the field. So even if this team gets off to a rough start and there's some questions that get thrown, which I'm not predicting or saying, I mean, it's baseball, so anything can happen one way or another. The momentum that they're grabbing right now on the recruiting trail and in the transfer portal is going to carry through the summer and the fall and really, really give a nice jolt of energy for the entirety of 2026 that we have remaining. And that's something that's needed, not just for the team and not just for the athletic department and the program, but for the fan base around them that really make that program special. There is an identity and there is a grittiness and a toughness. There is the beauty of Founders Park. There is the magic and the history of what this Gamecock baseball program has done in that place. But one of the most important factors of all of that is the fan support. And I think giving those fans some energy and some real hope and something tangible to grab onto, which are transfer portal results, is something that goes a long way towards getting this program back into a good spot when the baseball season gets started next year.
I agree with every single thing you just said there, Rob. One of the other things that I'll add to it is I've seen this in basketball. I've now seen it in baseball. We know it exists in football. We know it exists in women's basketball. But where I'm going here is the NIL commitment stands out to me because I felt relatively confident that whoever the next Gamecock baseball coach was going to be, they were still going to be very competitive NIL-wise and maybe even better. I don't know if they're truly, you know, 1.5 times the NIL budget they had last year, but the way they're using the money and the way they're able to be aggressive, and Lamont Paris talked about that with basketball being aggressive and being able to be the top bidder to secure a commitment, it's carried over to baseball as well. Look no further than, you know, the Costello brothers that came over from Wake Forest. Luke Costello, an outfielder, hit 17 home runs last year at Wake Forest, you know, hit over 300, I believe, you know, or close to it. That's something that's desperately missing from this baseball team, just the offensive pop. And the way you're seeing Kevin Schnall mix the two types of baseball together with, you know, producing runs but being athletic on the base paths. I mean, look no farther than J.D. Stein, who also just came over from Wake Forest, the kid that graduated early, came to Wake Forest, became their starting shortstop, got better as the season went on. But he's that gritty, tough guy that you're used to seeing on the diamond for the Gamecocks, and especially at that shortstop position. They needed to get more speed on the base pass. They need to get more pop. They've done all of those things. They're still working on some pitchers here. Both of those guys are going to be very, very important to the 2027 baseball season. The Gamecocks also still have a couple unannounced welcome homes. They picked up a pitcher today from Charleston who the Gamecocks coaching staff like a lot. But so, I mean, it's the welcome homes that are unannounced. It's just the commitment they're making and them still being in the game for a guy like Connor Schaus from Texas Tech, who's probably the best hitter in the transfer portal, if not the most, you know, the best all-around player in the transfer portal when it comes to, you know, what he can do with the bat and also on the field. And look, that kid, he's coming from Texas Tech. What do we know about Texas Tech? They pay. And while they haven't always committed to the baseball program the way that they probably should have, he's going to be an expensive player in the portal. And South Carolina is 110% in the game with him. He's a guy that's playing in the Cape right now. I don't know if he's going to be someone that makes a commitment in the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I know that the coaching staff isn't going to wait around forever. But at the same time, they are in this race, if not probably the leader in the clubhouse. And if they add him, then it's just full steam ahead. And you might have two guys in the lineup that can, you know, produce 15 to 20 home runs. They're just transfer portal guys, not including the guys that are going to get better. You know, I think about like a Tyler Pitzer coming back to South Carolina from Mississippi State, you know, someone that can help set the culture and the tone, because, you know, when you see all of these kids that are committing and, you know, doing their little write up for announcing their commitment, they've all talked about getting Gamecocks back to that powerhouse tradition that South Carolina fans are accustomed to. And I can't say that that was necessarily the mindset of the team over the past 2 years. You know, I think Paul Mainieri thought he'd come in year one and turn it all around and, you know, get back to a regional. But eventually he just kind of said, this is going to be harder than I think. And you could see that mentality leave the players when their coach lost faith in them. And it happened very, very early for Paul Mainieri. So another transfer portal guy they're looking at is shortstop Casey McCoy from Louisiana Tech. This is a guy that JB talked about on the show. I think you might have been on there with him, Rob. And look, J.D. Stein can move around, but there's going to be competition everywhere. And if they can get this kid who is in all conference as a freshman, he would be another big-time pickup. So, look, what I will just tell everybody is, you know, Rob and I love to, you know, talk about the highlights, but getting down into the weeds isn't for baseball, isn't necessarily what Rob and I do during the offseason. But, look, we have a very talented group of individuals on thebigspur.com and Gamecock Central who – just as the information comes out, just have it. They've talked to the right people. They know the right people. They're getting you the inside information. So just for a dollar, you can go right now to thebigspur.com, sign up. You know, inside the Gamecock host, Jamie Bradford does an amazing job with this stuff. No one's more better connected in the state of South Carolina than Jamie Bradford and to this coaching staff. And then Jack Beltry, who's been doing this for a long time for Gamecock Central, is fantastic. You know, if you're looking for baseball information, go to thebigspur.com, go to gamecockcentral.com, sign up for a dollar, and you'll get all this information that Rob and I just can't get to on, you know, every single show on Sunday nights. Let's move over to football, Rob. Since last Monday night, Gamecocks have picked up a trio or actually a quadruple of commitments.
Yeah. What time is it? It's 7:15. We had one today.
Yeah, so we added one today, and I saw a question that came in at the very top here.
Yeah, I got it.
Somebody was asking about the linebacker they picked up. Can't find it right now, but we'll talk about him here in a moment. But they picked up offensive lineman James Ross, wide receiver Avion Lewis, so they flipped from Kentucky, and defensive back Kelvin Millington. Let's start with James Ross, Rob. This is an in-state kid who said this offer meant everything to him to be able to represent his home state, stay close, play at the SEC level. At camp, this was a kid that earned his offer. He absolutely earned it. He was winning numerous one-on-ones against players that are ranked higher than, you know, he was going into it. I think this is a kid that when you're on Four Quarter Friday and, you know, Rob and Smitty are going around the state and they're saying, whoa, look at this guy. He's putting up doing big things as an offensive lineman. He's a guy that they're talking about playing center at South Carolina, and he'll be, you know, 6'5", 300-plus pounds by the time he gets in here. But to have him at center, what I've been told is he's very smart, and he can pick it up. He can lead an offensive line. So big-time underrated pickup there for the Gamecocks. Avion Lewis, go ahead, Rob.
I was just going to mention that you talk about Four Quarter Friday. This is James Ross is a kid that I've seen multiple times because of Four Quarter Friday. You can go months back in my notebook and see the notes where I met with Ridgeview coach Derek Howard to get some comments about his team, and that was the first player that he shared with me and that kind of jumped off. And then watching him at practice there at Ridgeview, you talk about him being able to lead that group. It's definitely the case there on his high school team. You can see how he kind of controls the energy, controls the narrative, and also is putting people in the right places. And then I was there at camp too. I mean, we were both there to see him. And I actually stood next to his dad during some of those drills and was talking about that desire that James had to be at South Carolina. You know, I asked him, what is he looking for? What's the move? And he said, to be right here. So, you know where he wants to be. And this is a kid, I think, Matt, that they just can't, even though he came in, it's a camp offer, and you think about sometimes sometimes the average fan can look at that and go, well, there's not as much fanfare, it's not as big of a star rating. He came in and showed something, and so they're going to maybe take a chance on him. I don't really see this one that way. I think that there's a lot of upside here, and this coaching staff likes what they can do with James Ross, and it's absolutely one that you do not let get out of your backyard if you're South Carolina. He moved really well, I thought, there in at left tackle in a lot of these drills, kind of staying in front of those opposing defenders that you mentioned are no slouches themselves that were there running those drills against him. And they continued, the coaching staff did, to throw multiple defenders at him rep after rep, where originally they were rotating players in and out because it's camp. They got to a point where they said, all right, you stay there. We're going to throw different styles, different body types, different moves at you. And I didn't see him lose a rep. So something to pay attention to for sure. Kind of an under the radar guy, maybe not an immediate impact, but something that's going to make a difference down the road, I think, for the Gamecocks.
And on top of that, you don't want offensive linemen to have to be immediate impact guys. I mean, you have a Darius Gray out there that might be, but you don't really want that. I will say that, you know, it's always fun when you go to these camps and then, you know, you see a sophomore and you're like, wow, who is that kid? Like, he looks like he could, you know, play right now in the SEC. And then, you know, the rankings come out and the kid is, you know, ranked top 100 in the country, like Sequel Patterson, like Josh Dobson, you know, all this. And you kind of feel like, I found that person. I saw that person at camp.
Yep.
But all of a sudden, when those guys get on those lists, they have offers out the wazoo. And, you know, some guys, they're a little bit slower in their development for whatever reason. But camp offers, man, they hit at a high clip. I mean, we can all go back to probably the most famous example of a camp offer is Nicky Mwari. And, you know, it's funny. I talk to so many Gamecock fans that are like, ah, man, just a two-star. Like, what did they do, take him? But no, they saw him. They wanted him. And then becomes a four- or five-star, then you're panicking that they're going to lose him to a bigger program. So it's funny how, like, the mind can work sometimes. But, yeah, James Ross is a big one, kind of like Blake Franks in my mind, like a guy that just, you know, kind of was under the radar, got flirting with three-, four-star status his entire high school career. But Gamecocks are still very excited about Blake Franks. You don't hear about him because he's not starting, because he's developing. We talked about this last week, but wide receiver Avion Lewis, four-star wide receiver that was committed to Kentucky. He jumped in the boat for South Carolina, flipped early this past week. And he's just a big-time get, man. He's 6'3". He's athletic. He can run all the routes. But the one thing that I love more about this commitment than just the talent, which we talked about, is the pipeline that may be developing at his high school. They have a really good high school program out of Virginia. I think it's – how do you pronounce it, Rob?
I think it's Huguenot.
Yeah. You know my pronunciations. But to get him in the boat and to get him feeling the love, and look, he feels very loved at South Carolina, and he reciprocates it. So a big get. And then we've talked a lot about defensive back Kelvin Millington. You know, Rob, you've actually, you know, talked with Kelvin, so I'll let you take the floor here and talk about what the Gamecocks are getting.
Yeah, he's been one that I think has been excited about South Carolina in the whole process. And the common refrain with him from the time he jumped onto the scene was just his frame looks like a prospect that Torian Gray is going to make into something great. So I think, again, this is a kind of a developmental thing, but we've seen it time and time again when it comes to Torian Gray, what he can do when he's got the talent that he likes. So I don't ask a lot of questions when it comes to secondary, other than, hey, if I'm talking to a prospect, what is the coaching staff telling you specifically in terms of role that they want you to do? I think he's a kid that they envision is going to be able to do some stuff at multiple spots. So we'll see where he ends up, Matt. That will be the thing that's interesting to me, is like in a couple of years, where do we see him pushing for a starting spot or showing up in that two deep? What position is it, or is it a thing like maybe a Jalen Kilgore, where you kind of are using him in different places based on
need,
what your biggest need is? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So with that type of frame, I think that they're going to be able to stick him in a couple of different places as long as he comes in and brings the physicality that you need in the SEC, which I think is always a jump from the high school level, and some guys are able to showcase that a little better in high school than others. If there's anything about Millington that I want to see the physicality really come on for him when he's able to get on campus. But there's a great group of defensive backs to learn from that are already in this pipeline. I think South Carolina has done a phenomenal job, and we've said this time and time again, but I think there are some knowns in that group right now, even in terms of the young guys like Jazavian Currents and Tristan Lewis, who are going to continue to hold the standard, if not push it forward for the following classes to come behind them and continue to grow and learn under Torian Gray. So this is one that I'm excited about. And I think that Kelvin Millington just like James Ross. And I'm not saying, and you mentioned it with Avion Lewis too. I'm not saying this is not the case with all of these prospects, but he said for a while that South Carolina was his favorite, that they were the team to beat. So different phrases like that. So I think that he's one that really appreciates and loves the fact that he's going to be in Columbia. And that's half the battle, Matt, in the transfer portal era, in the NIL era, is that you love where you are. That keeps kids' feet planted a little better, I think, when other offers may come calling at times.
Oh, I think you're 100% right. And then you can add Jackson Ross, linebacker from Hammond, who committed tonight. I will say that there was a point in this recruitment that South Carolina was not the leader. Despite his dad, David, playing basketball at South Carolina, he was very enamored with Texas Tech, very enamored with Vanderbilt. South Carolina had to come from behind in this recruitment. And oftentimes it just boils down to, do I want to do what dad did? Do I want to go to the same school dad did? You know, do I want to go somewhere else? I've lived in Columbia essentially my whole life. And, you know, seeing what Texas Tech is able to do on defense, and then obviously Vanderbilt is no slouch defensively either, with their head coach, Clark Lee, being a defensive guy. But he went on all his visits. He went to Vanderbilt. He went to Texas Tech. He went to South Carolina. In the end, the Gamecocks got it done. You know, this is a kid who is a private school kid. We'll call it what it is. Grown up in a private school, and there's nothing wrong with that, especially when you think about Hammond, who is the elite private school team, probably, and definitely in Columbia, and if not top one, top two, top three over the last 10 years in the state of South Carolina. So he's accustomed to winning. He's not built like a private school kid. You know, a lot of kids can go put up numbers in private school and don't sniff offers. I mean, this guy had Texas Tech and multiple ACC, multiple SEC offers to his name. He's an athlete that plays middle linebacker. I mean, he physically looks like the type of guy you'd want to anchor the middle of your defense. He's smart, obviously. He's not a kid that I think you necessarily want to have to play right away, because the game is going to be different going from Hammond to the SEC. But he has some development to him. He has already some of the prerequisite skill set that you need, body type that you need, athleticism that you need. He played multiple sports at Hammond. He's also a standout basketball player, which comes as no shock to me, because I was a ball boy for his dad at South Carolina, and it was really easy. All I had to do was stand underneath the net, but that's where the ball was coming out of every time. But I've talked to enough coaches around the state that have told me he's the real deal as an athlete. So, Rob, anything you want to add on Jackson Ross's commitment tonight?
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing for me with Jackson Ross is, like you said, I don't want that skeeza stigma to get on him. And I think that needs to be addressed from a public perspective anyway. I said this on Friday, on Four Quarter Friday, is like, you know, Jordan Burch and Boogie Huntley came out of this school too. So let's not, Mike Tyler is currently at South Carolina, and you better write that name down if you're not following it already, because Mike Tyler is going to make noise this year. I think that if you go, oh, it's a private school kid, is it just a thing where they're taking him because he's a legacy or because he's right there in Columbia, and so it makes sense? No. That's not what's happening here. So don't think of it that way. We saw the question earlier from Pimp on a Blimp, who said, is the linebacker decent? Yeah, he's more than decent. Okay. This is not a take just to put a spot on the roster or do somebody a favor or anything like that. I know that those things have been floated around out there, not just about Jackson Ross, but about private schools in general. And I'm here to push back on that, because I think that you got to look at the measurables, and you got to look at the tape, I think, a lot of times too. Numbers don't lie, but in high school, they kind of do. So you got to look at not just what the stats say, but what does he look like on the field? And he looks like he's going to come in and compete with this group moving forward, or Clayton White wouldn't be in there with him.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as we sit here now, the Gamecocks have the 41st best recruiting class in the country. Obviously, you know, we've heard it from fans, we've heard it from everybody, we've said it to ourselves internally. This class, it really needs to, you know, continue to grow. And, you know, I think they're probably going to sit around 18, 21, 22 commitments when it's all said and done. And, you know, there's an opportunity for this class to rise pretty quickly. I love this metric, and I talk about it a lot, the blue chip ratio. Not that I think that, you know, all these recruiting classes, you know, all pan out once they get to college, but it just shows you what their high school ranking was coming out. And then it's a percentage of the 4 and 5 stars that make up the scholarship players. And right now, South Carolina sits at 50% blue chip ratio, which is good for like 6th or 7th or 8th in the SEC. So right now, you know, looking at it, South Carolina has a 25% blue chip ratio with their current class of, you know, 12, 13 kids. But, you know, like we talked about last week, you know, if they had landed some of these guys that, you know, quite frankly, the Gamecocks are getting heavily negative recruited against with the coaching staff's, you know, staying power at South Carolina. And look, the coaching staff has to prove that this year because, I mean, those things are real. I mean, they everybody in the building knows that, you know, a 5 and 7, a 4 and 8, a 6 and 6 isn't going to get it done at South Carolina long term. But if you, but what I always say is you continue to see the number of just talented players that come on the Gamecocks campus during, you know, the off season, during recruiting, during the season, they're recruiting elite players. And sometimes you're not going to get them. Sometimes you are going to get them. I mean, South Carolina's had recruiting classes that are smaller that, you know, were 67, 70% blue chip. So they'll be smart with it. But if they have a good season, I do think that there are a lot of people that can come back into the boat for South Carolina. They probably finished 2nd for. But we do have some notable decisions that are on the horizon right now. And every single one of these, except for one, is either going to be a 4 or 5 star announcement. So let's go through it really quick, Rob. We don't want to hit too hard on this. We just did it last week. But we can say if we feel anything changed. July 1st is a big day in the recruiting calendar. The whole month of July is most programs want to have their class pretty much done by the end of July. But July 1st, Josh Dobson will be announcing his commitment. I'm going to come down to South Carolina, Texas A&M, and Michigan. I'll just say right now, in my opinion, and then Rob, you know, please add to this, I don't think South Carolina is 3rd. I don't think they're 2nd. I don't know if they are tied at 1st and they're going through the final decisions right now, but I know that South Carolina has put the best NIL package on the table as things stood about a week ago on his official visit when things matter. He brought his entire family on a lot of these visits and, you know, staying close to home and being a South Carolina kid matters to him. Torian Gray is probably his favorite coach that's recruiting him right now. And he believes in Torian Gray. So, well, I'm not going to pencil in Josh Dobson to South Carolina. I'm certainly not going to say, oh, another 5-star, you know, from the state of South Carolina going elsewhere. I don't know for sure, but I can promise you that, you know, there will be multiple conversations leading up to that July 1st commitment. And, you know, I won't be shocked if it's South Carolina.
I wouldn't be either. And we said this before that, you know, this is a hefty term, but he's the crown jewel of the class. Let's just call a spade and not play around like this isn't the top target that the Gamecocks have been going after in this 2027 group, and for good reason, Matt. And I think that getting him not only adds to that DB room for sure, and it's gonna make a major impact on what Torian Gray can do because he is such a high talent player, but the momentum that you get from landing a player like that impacts what's coming up beyond that, because that, I mean, it's a selling point. Other players want to come in when you see the hype and the buzz. We understand. Let's take a minute here to remember for everybody that's watching and listening to us right now, these are high school kids. They are young men, I get it, but they're high school kids. And so they are going to move and ebb and flow in a lot of cases based on the same things that every other high school kid moves and ebbs and flows on, which is some of that hype and buzz and social media traffic. And that's why that element is so important, especially in recruiting. The relationships are there. You mentioned it, Matt, that the NIL package is very, very strong. So all of the pieces to this puzzle have come together for South Carolina to land Josh Dobson. At the end of the day, he just got to make a choice about where he's most comfortable. And if that is South Carolina, look out for what could come on the heels of it, because I think that it will have a ripple effect.
Yeah. Then you got Marquise Evans. He's a defensive tackle. His commitment date is July 1st. South Carolina is the only program recruiting him as a defensive tackle. He's gotten much bigger. I mean, I think he's up to 260 now. We talked about it last week, but you have Travion Robertson, who had that exact same trajectory from high school to college, then to the NFL. I think this is predominantly right now South Carolina and Auburn. But, you know, Florida, Miami, and Tennessee are still chasing him. And when you have a Miami and a Tennessee, and to a certain extent, Florida too, you know, NIL will come into play here. And look, Auburn is desperate right now. Like they are sick of playing second fiddle to Alabama for sure, but they're also sick and tired of being one of the worst teams in the SEC. So I don't know what will happen. You know, at this, he's had a long relationship with Travion Robertson. They've connected, but I don't have a feel one way or another here, Rob.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that I have a good feel one way or another either, but I do think it is interesting that South Carolina is the only program recruiting him as a defensive tackle. I think that makes them stand out. We'll see what happens. But another player, I feel like, Matt, even if he commits elsewhere, that they will definitely keep tabs on and continue to be recruiting unless something develops that I'm unaware of at this point.
Yeah, the next one is a teammate of Josh Dobson. This is Davion Jones. He's another defensive back, safety, hybrid. He can play anywhere in the backfield. He took visits to South Carolina, Auburn, Georgia, LSU, and Indiana. This definitely has an SEC flavor to it. You know, I spoke with someone today who's well-connected that said he doesn't know. He thinks it'll be SEC, but he doesn't know. And, you know, this is a situation where South Carolina has been recruiting Davion Jones the longest. He seemed to build a quick and fast friendship with Josh Dobson. They've taken a lot of official visits together. They're very, you know, good friends now. I will say that, you know, we have a prominent message board poster on thebigspur.com at Gamecock Central who posted just yesterday that he felt that Gamecocks would get 4 out of the 5 official visits from last weekend. So you do the math there and you can kind of put the pieces together. There is confidence somewhere. So I think this is going to be an SEC battle. I don't see him going to Indiana, and I would watch what happens on July 1st, because the only team that is in both Josh Dobson's and Davion Jones' final choice list is South Carolina.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, this could be, you mentioned Josh Dobson in relation to the Davion Jones decision. This could be ripple effect number one if Josh Dobson commits on the first, where it has an impact on what Davion Jones does on the second. It's a big week. First, second, third, fourth. 4 days in a row that we're watching commitments, Matt.
Well, then you go to July 3rd, and, you know, Nate Carson, a guy that you're really familiar with. I mean, if you could pull a Josh Dobson and a Nate Carson in the same week, you used the word earlier, Rob, momentum. And that is a lot of momentum going the Gamecocks' way to get two in-state guys, two guys that – people gravitate to for different reasons. And now you start hearing about those group chats and, you know, those guys that are coming on an unofficial visit. Look, I don't know where Nate Carson's going to go. I said it last week. You know, I thought it was probably down to, you know, South Carolina, Clemson, and Georgia. Reading the tea leaves, it seems to be South Carolina, Georgia right now. But he would be another big get if the Gamecocks could pull him off.
I agree. And I think that, you know, I'll say this shortly. We mentioned this last week, but It has been a recruitment that's had a lot of movement, and a lot of the pitches have impressed Nate. So I think that, again, South Carolina being last is important, but you've had a little bit of time for him to go back and reflect and think about it. We will be covering this one closely from the Big Spur and from Four Quarter Friday, with that being another in-state prospect. So just continue to watch. Again, July 3rd. That's offensive tackle Nate Carson from Irmo, right there in the Gamecocks' backyard. There's been some success coming out of Irmo. Irmo is loaded with talent in 2026, and this is one of the top players on the team. So, yeah, I mean, I think it could go either way right now, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, and then we'll close the recruiting portion of this with on July 4th, Jaden Brody. This is a name that Gamecock fans are learning quickly. A kid that picked up an offer at camp, defensive end. Virginia Tech's been there for a long time. But, you know, to announce a commitment pretty quickly after, you know, picking up an offer, things can move very fast. We saw it with Trey Segura and LSU, how quickly things can move if it's just the right message at the right time to the right prospect. So I don't know much on this one, guys. I'm not going to, you know, mess around here and say, hey, Gamecocks are the leader. But I do think it's primarily Gamecocks and Virginia Tech, stronger, longer, or last person to the party. What do you think, Rob? Anything you want to add?
Yeah, we've seen that a little bit. Like if the right – you mentioned the right timing comes in, South Carolina has definitely come in and made a push. You can see the recruiting at the edge position for the Gamecocks has been more misses than hits, you know, in this class so far. And Jaden Brody would be a good pickup at 6'2", 220. You know, definitely some room for him to continue to grow. At a new school last year in Rollsville there in Raleigh. So we'll see where this goes on Independence Day. But no, I don't have a ton of insight as to where it's going necessarily.
Yeah, and honestly, this is a prospect that even like the insiders like us are trying to get our arms around. Yep. So yep. We're going to hit a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And we come back, we're going to close out the show talking about five to play five ruling, and then also Kent State and Towson. All righty. Welcome back into Late Night Gamecock Show. I am Matt Anderson, and Rob Williams, as always, is joining me. Rob, we're going to hit this one pretty quickly, but the five to play five rule is coming down the pipe. For those that haven't heard about it or don't understand it, trust me, I'm trying to understand it too. There's a lot of technicalities in here, but the basic gist of it is starting next year, an NCAA athlete's eligibility clock begins the academic year immediately following their 19th birthday. If a student athlete enrolls in college before their 19th birthday, the clock starts at the time of their first semester. So basically all it means is red shirts are kind of going out the window. No one's going to be redshirting anybody anymore in probably any sport. It's just you have 5 years to play the sport that you come to college to play. So they're going to go into effect for the recruiting class of 2027. So, that's what we've been talking about this entire time. Now, here's the kicker. Active players with more than 5 years of eligibility who have already been approved will not lose their eligibility. Other active and incoming players in conjunction with their schools will determine whether to use the new or the old model for the remainder of their eligibility. So quickly, what that kind of means is that you have players, from different recruiting classes that might have played 3 full years. If they played, a redshirt year, then they're going to go back to the rule to say they get to play 5 years. So how does that impact South Carolina football? We'll start there. Nick Harbor could potentially have another year in this situation. Tight end Maurice Brown could have another year in this situation. Defensive back Judge Collier, defensive lineman Kelby Collins, and defensive end Caleb Herring. Those are just names from the two deep. There will be more impact further down the depth charts. But, this is a situation, Rob, where when this rule comes into place, it's going to affect basketball. As the way I'm interpreting this rule, Juan Fernandez and Hugo Lopez could potentially have 4 years of eligibility once they come to college next year. Corey Mincy is going to get an extra year. The Gamecocks now have him potentially for 2 seasons. When you look at baseball, there's a number of players now that have 4 years of eligibility, J.D. Stein being one of them. Who just came over from Wake Forest. So same with catcher Andrew Costello. Now you start thinking about how this is going to work with the MLB draft. Traditionally, if you went to a four-year college, you had to be 3 years removed from high school graduation or 21 to enter the draft. Now, a lot of players use that for leverage. If you draft me, you're going to pay me X amount of dollars or I'm just going to go back to school and you lost that money. So we'll see how all of this plays out. I think for football, Rob, and I want to get your take on it. For football, you're going to see more players skipping the NBA draft. NFL draft. You already saw the NBA draft. There were only like 17 early draft kids who left school early because they're going to get paid more to play college.
Right. Yeah, I think that the first thing that jumps off to me is we just cleared out the COVID eligibility players, and now we're going to have this new group of existing players who are going to gain an extra year. Benefits the Gamecocks, but you're going to go back to seeing a little bit of that, oh my gosh, well, I feel like we've played this guy every year and he's been there for 8-9 years, and it's not quite that long as what it was with some of this COVID eligibility stuff that we just dealt with, but there are extra years that are being tacked on. I think when it comes to a any of these sports, basketball is probably the one that jumps off to me the most, Matt, is that it gives a little bit more of a runway for some of these players to develop and impact the program. There are going to be guys on the football team, specifically on the defensive front, that I think about, Matt, where, you know, if they have kind of a year that's in the middle, if Kelby Collins balls out this year and has the best year of his career, I find it hard to believe he's not going to go into the NFL. Same thing with Caleb Herring, but those are guys who you're looking who have had SEC success in spurts, in flashes. You're looking to become more consistent in 2026. So to say, well, they get another year so they can come back. Well, if they perform really well this year, I don't know they will come back, enter NIL, like you mentioned. That's where that competitive balance is gonna really play a role in terms of how does school X or school Y, and in this case we're talking South Carolina, but I'll hear in 13 minutes be talking about it from an entire SEC standpoint, right? How do they bolster those NIL payments for guys to say come back for year five? It's gonna get really, really interesting. But I do think it extends the runway, and that changes the coaching carousel a little bit too, not just in South Carolina, but in college athletics as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, what you'll see, I think in the NFL specifically, if you're not a first-round pick or a second-round pick, all you're guaranteed is your signing bonus. Yep. So you're going to see it like in your – to your point, like Caleb Herring might be like a fourth-round guy. He's going to make more money coming back to college 1 year, whether it's in South Carolina or somewhere else, than he'll potentially make going to the NFL. In basketball, you're going to see a lot of these coaches that have been kind of finding those one-year rentals start, you know, moving back a couple years and say, well, if I can get this guy on a two-year contract, a three-year contract, I'd rather go young to keep my core together. It'll be interesting. I think you're going to, you know, with baseball, you're going to see draft decisions be made that are different. At the end of the day, they're just asking – the NCAA is just asking their SEC, Big 12, Big 10 – conferences to find more money for players because these payrolls are going to continue to go up.
Yeah, and I think at this point specifically, Matt, at South Carolina for football and basketball, it has a very specific impact because both coaches are kind of on a perform or your time is up type of whether it's spoken, unspoken, written, unwritten. That's kind of the deal with both Shane Beamer and Lamont Paris. So if they can perform up to the level that those coaches keep their jobs, which I'm not saying they will or won't, like we've pretty much given our opinions on where things are headed in those cases, then there is a little bit more of a runway for, well, you talk about Corey Mincy, for example, to grab an extra year and come back and continue to move that program forward so that you can backfill that point guard position behind him and have sustained success under this Lamont Paris staff. That's what's really intriguing to me about it is how you can almost stretch out covering the gap a little bit with some players that grab an extra year.
Yeah, and you're only going to see maybe three or four players exhaust their eligibility in college basketball this year. So if you have a good season and you can say, I have my core coming back, and maybe where NIT wasn't good enough for Lamont Paris, maybe it is with the more NIL money they're going to have and a better plan. So We'll see how it all plays out. I do quickly want to get to so we talked about our previews, right? So we're going to be previewing, you know, the Gamecocks football schedule. We're going to focus on two opponents per episode going forward, and it's going to be the power conference opponents, so SEC and Clemson this year. Give you some quick information on Kent State and Towson. Kent State has not been a good football team. They've won five games over the last 3 years. Just so you guys know, last year they lost 62-14 at Texas Tech, 66-10 to a not great Florida State team, and 44-0 against Oklahoma. They will play Wofford and Ohio State after they play the Gamecocks. I will say that Kent State's quarterback is pretty decent. He didn't play to start the season, but he came in and completed 56.7% of his passes, not great. Averaged 8.5 yards per pass attempt, pretty good, but 18 passing touchdowns versus 3 interceptions. This is actually a kid that's fast and can run and be more dual threat than his numbers will show. But here's the big kicker for me, Rob. Last season, their defense gave up 427 yards per game and 34 points per game, and they allowed 191 rushing yards per game. So it's a big test for Kendall Briles and Gamecock fans' minds. Knowing those statistics, you better do better than that. especially with how the teams have performed. They played last season against them. But Kent State's, according to Phil Steele, is going to finish 10th out of 13th in the MAC. They got a number of players that are going to be potentially like all-conference guys. Towson finished 6-6 in 25, 7-5 in 24. They lost 44-17 at Maryland, 38-20 at Cincinnati. They'll have played Maine and Navy before they come to Williams-Brice Stadium. So, Rob, you know, thinking about those two games, you know, and then the numbers I just gave you, what do you think would make Gamecock fans happy on offense? You can go wherever you want with this.
Yeah, okay. And, you know, here's the thing about on offense. When it comes to both of these games, I think that you need to see consistent ball movement when I'm looking at it. And obviously you want to finish drives, but the consistency of being able to move the ball down the field, it's going to be exciting, Matt, if you hit a couple deep shots to Nick Harbor, or if Jaden Sellers takes a screen and goes for an 80-yard touchdown like he did against Coastal last year. But I think the consistency of driving the football and kind of exerting force, I think the running game is a big factor here. Everybody's going to want to see in the moment Lenore Sellers go out there and move around. They're going to want to see him throw the ball accurately at multiple levels. But I think Lenore Sellers' legs and the running game with Matt Fuller and company are the two top things that we should be watching from an offensive standpoint, because if those things are rolling – and they're rolling really well, then I think that we'll be able to see a little bit more of the vision of what's going to happen with Kendall Briles and this group here. And I'll mention, too, you talk about Kent State's quarterback. He is flashy and moves around well. 18 touchdowns to 3 interceptions, so efficient. But, you know, a 50 – I have it right here – 56% completion percentage last year. That's the one for me where – You want to make him throw the football, I think, and not let him get out there and get loose and do a little bit of damage. But definitely watching the running game, what is the push of the offensive line? They should steamroll these two teams on the line of scrimmage, and that's probably what I'm watching the most.
What I'll be watching the most for, and I feel like it's been, you know, just part of the problem is the Gamecocks have played real opponents earlier in the season for so long now that – you know, when you did have like two opportunities like this, it always was sandwiched between a big game or something like that. And look, yeah, you do have Mississippi State coming in week 3. But what I want to see is this game not treated like a scrimmage or not treated like practice. So often you see South Carolina come out and they might win by 30, 40 points in the game, but it's because they had a punt return for a touchdown, two defensive scores, so the offense didn't look that great in the game. So what I'm looking for is this to be treated like you see other teams around the country treat it. We're going to go score as many points as humanly possible because we want our team to get used to performing, get used to doing things that lead to points. We're not out here trying to milk a clock for 9 minutes just to prove that we can hold the ball for 9 minutes against a not very good football team. So for Gamecock fans and for me, I want to see electricity. I want to see 21, 28 points in the first 15 minutes of the game. I want to see what I see other CFP potential teams doing. And I think if they struggle with that, good luck, because it's going to be loud again. And this coaching staff does not need any loud. From defensive standpoint, I mean, I don't know if we'll see Dylan Stewart. I think that would be one of the people I'd want to see play. But at the same time, they have to prove that what they did in the transfer portal and how these linebackers have potentially improved are making life difficult for the quarterback. You know, you mentioned it earlier. You know, they're going to play against a Kent State quarterback that has the ability to make things happen. And you need to have him in the 40% on completion percentage, and you want him to be running around like a chicken with his head cut off because the defensive line is overwhelming him and the linebackers are shooting gaps. And Judge Collier and Vicari Swain are blanketing, you know, the primary options at wide receiver. So I have less worry about the defense than I do the offense. And for the offense, it's just the unknown.
On the defensive side of the ball, man, I think that they just need to do what they're expected to do in this case. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you can rely on supreme athleticism and size, I think, against both of these opponents and kind of sit back a little bit and know that, hey, I can make up some ground. That is not what you want to see from this Gamecocks football team. You want them to be aggressive. You want them to be able to anticipate and use their minds and their athleticism. Are they comfortable in the system? Do they know what they're doing? Are they reading their keys? Can they get where they need to be and then use their superior athleticism and size to go and make the play? That's what I'm kind of looking for here. If that's the case, I think it will be smothering to both of these offenses, and that will give Gamecock fans a lot of confidence. Also, as always, we're thankful for everybody over there in the chat box, and appreciate you guys tuning in with us tonight and commenting and participating. We mm-hmm. love it when you do that. A lot of familiar faces. A new one over there is Mr. Bill Tyler, who's tuning in. Just wanted to say hello to him as well. Thanks for being here. We love it when people are active over there in that chat box. Matt, it has it's been a fun night. What else you got about Kent State and Towson? We tying a bow on those?
Well, buddy, man, it's absolutely flown by. We'll have plenty of time to talk about these games. You know, we're not going to not talk about Towson and Kent State as the season progresses. But do want to say, you know, next week we will be back. So even though ITG will be off the YouTube, off the airways for a couple of weeks, Rob and I will be here. We hope everybody has a very safe 4th of July. You know, have as much fun as you can, celebrate America. But we want everybody back here with all their fingers come July 5th, you know, watching this. So you can type in the chat box and communicate with us. We don't want you losing any fingers because of fireworks or do anything that can get you in trouble. But we will be previewing Mississippi State and Alabama next week, along with, we know that the baseball portal is not going to stop. You know, football is still, what a big week football has next week. Hopefully we'll have enough time to get to everything. But again, we want to thank everybody that's been here with us tonight, everyone that comes back. When you give us this time, it's the most valuable thing you have. So we appreciate you spending your time with us and viewing us as valuable. So, Rob, get on over to SEC Sunday Night. Everybody follow me to go watch Rob on SEC Sunday Night. And have a blast, man. Have a great show.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for being here, everybody. We're going to get over there and dig in a little bit. We got a little Big Ten flavor with our guest tonight. We'll talk a little bit about that Michigan basketball job and how does it impact the SEC a little bit with that trend, maybe starting with some college coaches moving to the pros. So exciting night on SEC Sunday Night. Join us there. Thanks for being here on the Late Night Gamecock Show. He's the man. Matt Anderson, the late night Gamecock himself.
We'll see y'all later. Bye.